Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
And Proctor will just dribble it out. Chance of let's go, Knicks. It's over. Believe it, Knicks fans, for the first time in 27 years, the New York Knicks are going to the NBA Finals. The dream season continues, and hopes of ending a decades-long championship drought are very much alive.
From the heart of Queens to the ears of sports fans everywhere, this is the Sports Kings from Queens. Strap in because the Kings are in session. Today's Wednesday, May 27th. This is episode 234. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts Kevin and Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcast. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a look. Join our pages. We'd love to hear from you. Feel free to leave us questions, comments. We'll get back to you. Tonight, we go around the world of sports. We're going to get it started, and we're going to start it with the Knicks. Guys, it started almost 30 days ago, down 1-2 to Atlanta. It's 11 wins in a row, outscoring opponents 262 points, and we are off to the finals. Kev, talk to me about the Knicks, baby.
The greatest 11-game stretch in NBA history?
Like yes. Said,
plus 262, that's more than anybody's ever done in 11 games. Regular season, playoffs, doesn't matter. Greatest stretch in NBA history. It's been incredible. You go back, April 23rd was their last loss over a month ago. 11 straight, all by double digits. And think about it. They're 12-2 with 2 1-point losses. They're that close to being perfect this postseason. You know, it's been incredible. I mean, the series, after the comeback from game one that we talked about last week, the rest of the series was pretty easy. You know, Cleveland had the moments, but the Knicks actually handled them pretty well. And game four, another blowout in game four. All three series clinches have been such blowouts. Jalen Brunson has yet to play fourth quarter minute in a series clinching win. That's how dominant they've been. And, you know, when you're getting the contribution, I mean, everybody in the starting lineup is playing well. Everybody. You know, somebody might have an off game, but somebody else picks them up. And then you got, you know, McBride and Mitch Robinson, and especially Landry Schmidt in this past series was incredible. But when you've got seven or eight guys a night, you know, one or two can have an off night, and somebody's got to pick up the slack. And right now, they're clicking on all cylinders as we wait game one next Wednesday. Darren?
I mean, listen, there's really not much you can pick on with this team, right? I mean, you sit there and you say, you know, Brunson was amazing. Anytime he needed to hit a big shot, he did. And yep. Cat came on, you know, Bridges and Ananobi is the 3-4 on those wings, locking people down, but hitting big shots. Hart was a Swiss Army knife. He actually led them in scoring game two in the series. Yep. You know, Shamit was amazing. You can't shoot better than he did. McBride, Mitch, these guys were all good. I mean, what are you going to pick on? That Bridges wasn't accurate in game four? Or are you going to say that, you know, Shamit took Clarkson's job? Clarkson wasn't as good as Shamit? Or Cat still makes some bad fouls? I mean, you're really nitpicking to try to find a reason to find something wrong with what they did in this series. It was fun watching Kolek play. That's how bad it is. He goes out there, he's hitting threes, making fancy passes. You're like, oh, my goodness. There was nothing to really criticize. The defensive deficiencies have not shown up. The things that we've been talking about. You know, again, biggest criticism of the whole series is probably Cat early on when he was just wasn't really into it. And then Mitchell Robinson, the hack of Mitch, where he can't hit a foul shot. Outside of that, you know, defensively they play great. Offensively they play great. And Gino has been pointing it out every single game when we're texting back and forth, G, that when these guys are shooting like this, they can beat anybody. Right, G?
Absolutely. I mean, you get production from the starting five. Brunson at 26 a game. OG at 19 a game. Towns at 16 a game. Bridges at 14 a game. Bridges who, after the first three games in the Atlanta series, people wanted to throw out of town. Hart at 11 a game, and then you get everybody else chipping in with McBride 3-point percentage at 42%, Shamet at 60% from three and 55% from two. You get Robinson with 71 rebounds, and not even mentioning Alvarado and Clarkson. And, you know, when you get everybody chipping in like this, you get great play from Brunson. Towns has become the all-round player and not becoming the foul machine we saw in like last year's playoff game. This team just goes on, is that operating at another level right now? There's just no way around it.
Yeah, there's no ISO ball going on right now. They're moving the ball around. The assist per to field goals made. I mean, look at their assist numbers versus Cleveland. I mean, it's off the charts how much more they're getting the ball movement. There's no, like I said, there's very little isolation. They're getting balls out. If somebody comes at Brunson with a double team, he's getting it out quick. Cat, you know, I mentioned it last week, has been averaging, you know, 5-6 assists a game in the playoffs. I mean, it's just been everybody is chipping in. And when you're moving the ball around that well and creating such open shots, I mean, how many open threes in the corner did Shamet hit? I mean, it feels like every time he's shooting, he's wide open.
Yeah.
And that's just one example. I mean, the ball movement, the flow of the offense has been incredible, unlike we've seen in our lifetime, probably for the Knicks.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the best offensive team we've seen. I know that the old Red Holtzman teams were known for ball movement, but we weren't really able to watch those. But, yeah, I mean, what you're saying is just it's so accurate, because every time down the court, this is a fast-break Knicks team, not something we're used to seeing, okay? This is a team that runs at every opportunity. Mike Brown, who was fired, 18 months ago in Sacramento? Michael Brown, they got run out of Cleveland. I mean, you know, he was, the Knicks' third or fourth choice for this job? He wasn't the first guy on the list, let's be honest. We settled, and we were all happy that it was Mike Brown at the end, because what was left was all below Mike Brown. They didn't get the guys that they were aiming for. And, listen, coaching in you know, the NBA, NHL, certain sports is fleeting. So, you have one good year, one bad year, you could go. But, I mean, what he's done, the buttons he's pressed, we thought going into this playoff that the East had no shot to beat the West. And right now, not that we're homers, but we are. We're rooting for the Knicks. But the Knicks winning the championship is not out of the realm of possibility. I mean, you don't feel like OKC is that much better than them or San Antonio. I'd rather play OKC, to be honest, but despite the calls, and we'll get into that a little bit in a minute, because of the 7'6" unicorn that we don't know how to guard. But, you know, you don't feel like the West is going to be that – you don't think it's going to be a joke. Indiana took OKC to 7 last year. We don't know. I mean, you feel like if the Knicks are playing like this, they can beat anybody.
Okay, so we all thought the Knicks could get to the finals. They are now in the finals. We don't know yet. OKC is up 3-2. We'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. Do we all think that this season is now a success at this moment? At this moment, and that's how I'm going to phrase it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Listen, it's a historic 11 game run into the finals. You know, you are 12-2 getting to the finals in the playoffs. One can, you know, not dare to dream at this moment that you're going to have a shot now. Going before the playoffs started, you were an afterthought about winning the finals. And as of this moment, you are +210 odds-wise to win the title. So you're no longer an afterthought. We're not saying it's great odds, but you know what? You're not an afterthought anymore at this moment. So, but for you guys, this is a successful season, right?
Well, we said at the beginning, and you, I think, asked the question as we did our preview. You asked both Kevin and I, will it be a success? And both of us said, you got to take the next step. You have to represent the East. You have to win the Eastern Conference Final. Anything less than that is a disappointment. And so now they did it. Do I want to move the bullseye a little bit now? Absolutely. Do I want to win the championship? Yeah. Do I want to settle for this? No. Can I also see this team being a team that hangs around for a while? Yeah, because there are some good players that are going to be here. But one quick point I wanted to make before I pass it off to Kev. Just remember Jalen Brunson, okay, in 2024. He left $113 million on the table, okay? They allowed cap space to get Cat. That allowed cap space to get Bridges, extend Anunoby. This guy, I mean, you could say what you want about these guys. It's funny with the interviews and, you know, ask them about Josh Hart. Josh Hart's not a friend. You know, all the stuff that they mess around with each other. They do their podcast together, which is fun. And they're the Villanova frat boys and the whole thing, except for Dante, unfortunately. But what this guy did to help build a champion around him is not something that happens from superstars. And we also have heard for a while that you can't be a 6'2" superstar in the NBA, you know. And he's right there. I'm sorry. He's the most clutch player in the NBA right now. You know, shot for shot, I take him against anybody. Kev?
It's amazing when you look at his career stats. You know, 6'2", you don't think of it. But you look at what he did carrying back to Villanova and carrying it into the NBA, he's a 50% shooter. He's near 40% from three. He's over 80% from the line. The guy has always been able to shoot. Maybe we don't appreciate how well a shooter this guy is.
No, you're right.
Like you said, always overlooked, a little bit because he's 6'2", a little bit because he doesn't have the flash in the game, but my goodness, is he such a – I mean, he looks like a New Yorker.
Yeah.
I mean, as much of it – that's as high of a compliment as any of us can give a player, is that they are a New Yorker. They represent New York. They, you know, he's just looks like he's such a hard worker out there, and he's elevated his game since he's come here.
And you look at these guys; they like each other. I mean, you can see the camaraderie. I'm not winning does cure a lot of ills, right? I mean, so when you're winning, but when they were having up and down against good teams, and we were saying, the Knicks just aren't good enough to beat good teams right now. We're saying that throughout the season at different points. Every time they went up against Detroit, they got blown out. You know, certain things were happening. But you never saw anything break the team apart, which I thought was really good, too.
And like I said, he settled for $40 million a year instead of getting over $50 million a year.
Yeah.
Against me, he can live comfortably at 40.
No doubt. But most players wouldn't have done it, though.
No, I know. That's what's amazing is that how many of these guys are so selfish and just want the maximum that they can get. And Brunson said, no, I want to build a team.
This is basically what you guys called for when Thibodeau got fired.
Yeah.
Brown got him to the finals. I mean, you know, and as incredible as it is.
Usage hasn't been a difference in this series because it has.
Yeah.
The fact that Tibbs was very reluctant to go to the bench
and
the fact that Brown is doing it so easily. And you know, these guys are getting involved, and he's going with hot hands, so I'm fine with that. If Shamit's better right now than Clarkson, he's better than Clarkson. He gets the minutes right now. Clarkson's not complaining on the bench. You don't hear a peep from him. You know, if Alvarado was the upgrade over Kolek, then Alvarado plays. That's what it is, and he steals the ball left and right. I mean, you know, he's a defensive menace. There's a lot of cool things I like, KG. There's a lot of cool things I like.
All right. So only one thing is left. OKC is up 3-2. They need one more, and then we will have a counterpart for the Knicks. However, the beginning of that game will be next week, because even if they win, the first game is not until next, what is it, next Thursday, Kev?
Wednesday, June 3rd.
Next Wednesday. So there's still some time. Hopefully the rest versus rust factor does not become an issue. I almost feel like I want OKC to win as quick as possible, so they're both rested and rusted and the whole bit. Kev, any thoughts on OKC and San Antonio at 3-2 right now?
You know, 3-2, you think, oh, great series. But except for game one, which was a terrific overtime game, the other games, you know, have not been that close. One team's been pretty dominant each game. OKC takes 2 and 3, San Antonio 4, and OKC last night in game 5. Sets up Thursday night for game 6. If necessary, it'll be Saturday for game 7. And then, you know, it'll be two full days, a third day, you know, of rest for if it goes seven, to your point. If they ended on Thursday, you know, they've got almost as much rest as the Knicks. And maybe won't have so much of the impact of the rest versus rust at that point. So it's going to be interesting to see. You know, it's going to be game six, especially in San Antonio. Let's face it, it's going to be what does Wemby do? Because last night in game five, 4 for 15. He did get to the line 12 times, made it all 12. Terrific. But 4 for 15, 0 for 5 from 3. We saw it in last series, too, where he was 0 for 8 in one game from 3. Sometimes with him, you've got to say, you're 7 foot 6, get underneath, draw fouls, and use your 7 foot 6 and get the easy baskets.
And Fox had a bad game in game 5 also. He didn't even score double digits. For San Antonio to win, they need the big 3. They need Castle with Fox and Wemby all playing well. The flops last night by OKC, I felt like I was watching soccer. I felt like I was watching the World Cup. I mean, it was awful. I mean, I said it. We were a guest on another program, and they said, what would make you nervous about the finals? And I said, how many fouls are they going to give SGA? Wasn't just him, but my goodness. I didn't watch the whole game. I watched part of it, but I'm old, and I go to sleep a little earlier. But simply put, I mean, the amount of flopping OKC does is unreal. Am I making this? Am I exaggerating it, Kev? Because I don't know. I feel like it happens a lot.
No, they keep stats of, you know, the number of flops per game now with OKC compared to other teams, and they are so far above what other teams do. You know, the other night, you know, I think it was game 5. What did the Shai have? Like 15 shot attempts, and he flopped on 5 or 6 of them.
Yeah, I mean,
it's ridiculous the amount of flopping this guy does. He's all just trying to draw fouls. And, you know, if they let the Knicks play defense, they do have the wing defenders, Bridges, Hart, and Anobi, to deal with some of these wing players if they let them play, if they don't get drawn in by these flops.
I mean, the Knicks bench has shown it could play, but we haven't had to see it in large stretches except for blowout situations. So we'll find out. I'm with you, Gino. Not that I care about one team over the other in this. I'd rather see the team get in there quicker. I also just feel like the Wemby matchup is one that I don't know how the Knicks handle. I mean, not that OKC isn't great because they're defending champs and they're awesome, but I'd rather see more rest from the other team as well, and they're only 3 days rest separated, and both teams are overly rested for this.
I think from watching last night, I think OKC's depth is starting to look like it's becoming the difference now in this. Early on, I didn't see it so much. I think now it's starting to show. I don't know how much more Wembanyama has in him that he can do it by himself all the time. I think the depth that OKC has is a problem now. It's starting to show, I think, against San Antonio. So.
And they only have what, like 50 more first round picks in the next 4 years or whatever. So that depth is just going to keep going.
Unbelievable.
They draft kids from Europe that they're going to stow away there. So this way, when these guys get older, they'll bring. I mean,
I got
Sam Presti.
I got one more Nick thing just to throw at you guys. You know, I would like to move the bar just a little bit from making the finals. I don't want to see him get swept. I want one win. I'd like 2 wins if they lose, but I don't want to see him get swept, because then I think from 11 in a row to losing 4 straight would just be a total wipeout of a lot of people in their mind. So, all right. Yeah. Any other NBA points before we move on?
Nope. That's it.
All right, nope. Darren, I think you got some buried treasures for us.
Yeah. We're going to start with an NBA one, because it's just kind of interesting. Last 3 times the Knicks made the NBA finals, the U.S. hosted the World Cup, 94, 99, and this year. 99 was being the women's. Hopefully we have a little more luck than we did in 94, 99.
Yes.
But, yes, interesting thing. LSU, just because, you know, they're just such an interesting program. They actually have 3 coaches on staff this year that they fired before. So Johnny Jones was fired as basketball coach in 2017. He's back as an assistant coach. Ed Orgeron was fired in 21. He's back as an assistant coach. And Will Wade fired in 22 when he's hired back in 26 as an assistant coach. We're going to get to hockey in a little bit. Let me do one other one first, two quick baseball ones. There's only one baseball player in Major League Baseball history, gentlemen, to record 200-plus hits in a season, 75 or more stolen bases in a season, and 10-plus home runs in a season. Do you know who this player was? He's Ricky. Not current, but he's modern.
Ricky.
Nope.
Nope.
Kenny Lofton.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And what is it?
Kenny Lofton, 200-plus hits, 75-plus stolen bases, 10-plus homers.
Yeah.
Kenny Lofton.
He was at his peak, he was
borderline Hall of Famer for the way they do the Hall of Fame now. I never felt like he was a Hall of Famer when I watched him. But the way they do it now, it's a little different.
And Ricky didn't have the 200 hits, I assume?
That's what I'm assuming.
Okay. Yes.
I'll double-check it in the same season. I don't think he did.
Okay.
Only four players in the 80s, you know, had 30 or more homers in a season and 50 or less Ks in a season. One of those four guys did it three times. You have any guesses on who the four players were?
30 or more homers.
50 or less strikeouts in the same season.
50 or less strikeouts. Wow.
So only four guys did it.
Parker.
No. A very popular incorrect answer.
Well, thank you.
Think local.
Think local.
Think local. Mattingly?
Yes, three times. In 85, 35 homers, 41 strikeouts. 86, 31 homers, 35 strikeouts. 87, 30 homers, 38 strikeouts.
Wow.
Think another borough.
Queens.
Keith Hernandez?
Not Hernandez.
Carter.
Gary Carter, 1985 also. 32 homers and 46 strikeouts.
Wow.
Same year, American League player, Hall of Famer. To me, I'll give the hint away that Kevin will get right away and probably Gino will too. To me, the greatest third baseman I ever saw because he never made an out against the Yankees.
George Brett.
Absolutely. 30 homers, 49 strikeouts. And the fourth guy would be the hardest one to get, and there's a reason why I use this stat today. Bob Horner in 1980.
Oh, Bob Horner. 35
homers and 50 Ks. Bob Horner passed away this week at the age of 68. Was an all-time Brave. Had four homers in a game. In the big brawl between the Braves and the Padres that year with Pascual Perez and all that, when Champ Summers went to charge him in the dugout and he was hurt, Horner just kind of tackled Champ Summers. Then the crowd got in. Rest in peace, Bob Horner. But those are the four guys, which was really really interesting to me. And then one last one for you. One last baseball one. Right now in the American League, the division leaders are Tampa Bay, Cleveland, and Oakland. Do you know what they have? Well, the A's, I should say. Do you know what they have in common?
Lowest payrolls in baseball?
Lowest 10? Payrolls in their divisions.
Wow.
Those are the Guardians, the A's, and the Rays all have the lowest payrolls in their divisions. And one last NHL one, and I'll let you guys go back to other stuff. So John Tortorella, you know, we're going to get into it in a minute, is the only coach ever to have more than one sweep of a President's Trophy winner. He did it with Columbus against Tampa, and he did it with Vegas against Colorado. And I'll pass it back to you, Gino.
Wow. Oh, we'll go right to the NHL with that. So two series, one still going on. Carolina up 2-1 on Montreal. Game four going on right now. Carolina up 3-0 in the second. The other series is over. Vegas has beaten Colorado 4-0. Darren, you called this, by the way.
I did not call a sweep. I just thought I said six, but I think. But yes, I did call it.
Vegas just didn't beat Colorado. They smothered the hell out of them. The Golden Knights are going to their third Stanley Cup final in 9 years. This was a defensive masterclass, if you want to call it. Carter Hall had a .942 save percentage.
Carter Hart, absolutely.
Carter Hart, you're right.
No problem.
Colorado averaged 4.11 goals per game entering the series against Vegas. It was 1.75. They outscored them in 4-14-7. Tortorella's system just took over the series.
Yeah.
Checking heavy style peaked in game four. Colorado had no, they had no answers for this, by the way.
They had no McCarr either. And you saw the difference when he's not on the ice.
Yeah.
What that guy does to bring them into the zone. And it's not a good enough reason
because no.
You have McKinnon and you have Landeskog and you have.
I know. McKinnon was banged up too. I mean, McKinnon was banged up too, Darren.
Yeah, but he's playing. If you're playing, you're playing.
I agree.
If you're playing, you're not hurt. You know, yeah. Colorado was this close to being back in the series. They were up 3-0 in game three.
Yeah.
And throw the game away. They lost 5-3 there. Up 3-0. You've got to win that game. Get back in the series 2-1. You never know what's going to happen. And then last night, you know, like you said, the smothering defense. I mean, Colorado went 12, 13, 14 minutes without a shot.
Which is unheard of.
The shots were like 26 to 12, I think I remember seeing at one point. I mean, the shots wound up in a big way Vegas' advantage. Just a terrific, terrific series by Vegas. Probably the most successful expansion team in any sport in history.
Absolutely.
To be in three championships in their first 9 years, winning one with a chance to win a second one. It's incredible what they've done.
Okay, a little trivia for you guys real quick. What do Florida, Washington, the Devils, Columbus, Detroit, and the Islanders all have in common? They had more wins than the Las Vegas Knights, Golden Knights. They had more regular season wins.
Yeah.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
They all did. They all had more wins by that. The Knights finished with 39.
And a few of them didn't make the playoffs.
40 plus. Islanders had 43. Washington 43. The Devils had 42. I mean, you know, listen, you know, a lot happened. They were in the West. Everyone's in the West is a little weaker or whatever, but they went through Colorado like a hot knife through butter, guys.
Yeah.
It was not much of a series. And like you said, to start it off, you know, Carter Hart didn't let anything by him. I mean, he had a tough first period in game three. That's it. You know,
it.
12 periods. He had a tough first period in game three. You can't ask for more than that. And that they move on. They move on. And they're going to face the winner of Colorado, Montreal, right, Jay?
Well, Carolina,
not Colorado, because they already lost.
Well, listen, Carolina's up 2-1. Game four going on right now. Carolina's up 3-0 in the second.
Yep.
Montreal won game one.
I think that was a rest rust situation, to be honest, because here's the thing. Montreal in game one had 22 shots. In their last two games, they had 25. In the first period today, they had 5. They turned the puck over so much. Carolina forces turnover after turnover. If Dochus isn't playing like he's playing, these games can be 8-9-0. I mean, he's kind of standing on his head. They're losing 3-0. And the two wins were overtime for Carolina. Tonight doesn't look like it because – Montreal hasn't put up much of a threat tonight. They're up to 8 shots now, so I stand corrected from the 5 at the end of the first. They 3 in the first 6.5 minutes of the second. But, you know, I don't expect them to come back with the way Carolina plays defense. And Carolina's just systematically a wild team to play against. They force turnovers better than anybody. I mean, you guys as Islander fans saw it firsthand over the last few years when the Islanders were making the playoffs after going up against Carolina. Right, Kev?
Yeah. Between Carolina a few years, Tampa Bay before that. But, yeah, Carolina's been such a good team. Like you said, that game one, definitely the rust. Because it was funny, they scored 30 seconds into game one. You think, oh, they're ready. Montreal tied it within the first minute of the game.
Yeah.
That was that.
3-1 goal, 4-1, and you could tell Carolina was off that first period. Ever since then, it's been – Carolina, even though the scores, you know, it's two overtime games, you know, Ehlers and Zvechnikov. I think he did that one pretty well.
Not bad.
You know, yeah, they were overtime games, but I thought they were games that Carolina played Montreal for the most part. And tonight, obviously, 3-0, and it's been all Carolina so far.
And Dobos just played well in this game. They don't help them.
Yeah.
Everything's a turnover in their own zone.
Wouldn't it be much of a surprise if you see Carolina win the tonight and game five and be ready to play Vegas. I'm not sure when their finals will start.
The country is ready, and the NHL is gripped about the fact that Carolina will play Vegas in the Stanley Cup final. Not that Vegas is a small market, but it's not a big market, and Carolina certainly isn't. They need original six teams to get there. They need a little bit more. They need more of, you know, Detroit and Chicago and places like that, Toronto and Boston. That's what they need, and they're not going to get it this year.
You mean no one's looking at old school Vegas, Carolina, Darren?
It's just not the same. It's just not the same. It's even though it wouldn't draw, I think that they probably could use a Montreal team would be add a little excitement because they haven't had a Canadian winner in so long, 93.
You're probably right, Darren.
But nonetheless, it should be good hockey, and you can't argue with what Torch has done. As much of a prick as he is out there, I mean, he wins games until he wears out his welcome.
Yep. All right, let's head over to baseball. Yankees at 33-22, Mets at 22-33 before today. Yanks have won three in a row. They're at 5-5 in their last 10. Currently up 5-0 in the seventh. Gerrit Cole rolling along with three hits through six with 10 strikeouts. Darren, you want to talk a little Yankees?
Well, the thing is, I mean, I was excited about Cole coming back. Figured he'd have a little rust. Maybe he'd be better by the end of the summer, September, you know? My God, he's been great. It shouldn't even be like this. I mean, it's just fun to watch what he's got going on. Volpe is hitting. You know, I don't know what to say. Volpe's come up in big spots. He won the game the other day. Came up in the ninth with two on. Hit the game-winning two-run single. I mean, you know, things to like. Listen, I'm not going to talk about the bullpen this week. It sucks. We know that already. Schlittler is, again, you know, you feel like Cole with Schlittler now, and you're like, oh, my God. Rodon and everybody else coming in. This is probably the best rotation in baseball right now. And going in, you thought the Dodgers were going to have the advantage, but due to injuries and, you know, Sasaki not really being what you thought he was going to be yet, and Glasnow down, like we said, with the injuries, the Yankee bullpen, the Yankee starting rotation seems like the best one in the sport right now. Listen, you like want to see a little more consistency with the bats from everybody in the lineup, but. And then you're being a jerk, and I don't want to be a jerk because my friend across town has to watch something a little bit different than I do. Gee, any other comments before I pass it off to Kevin, the Mets?
No, you know what? Listen, Volpe coming back has probably helped out with a little consistency on that side of the infield. Listen, Ahmad Rosario is going to play a little bit. And when he plays third, you know, and McMahon's not in there, you also have more offense coming out. And the rest of that lineup is going to hit. I mean, if they get anything out of the bottom part of that lineup, this team is going to freaking hit the ball like mad. I mean, the top is ridiculous, and you put the bottom half going and forget it. I know you still want a bullpen arm, Darren. I know that. I can't imagine that we won't see a bullpen arm as the trade deadline gets closer. It'll probably be someone you don't love, but, you know, I can't imagine we're not going to see one. And as a couple of these guys come back from the IL, you're going to have one of these starters go to the pen also. So
I feel like whoever it is, the natural guy.
Because who?
I feel like Heel, because he misses bats, might be the natural guy. He's got to throw strikes.
Well, it depends. It also depends on who else is here and healthy, because you're still going to have others here. Well,
there's going to be at least another guy besides Heel that's going to go.
Exactly.
At least one.
If everybody comes back healthy. So yeah, if not, and I say that only because you don't know the timetable on Fried, you don't know the timetable theoretically on Rodon at the moment. You know that they're telling you X, but you don't know that that's the case at the moment. And if you're the Yankees, what the hell are you rushing them back for anyway? At 33-22 before today, so you know we'll see what happens. I don't know. Any additional comments, Darren?
No, I think it's more exciting to hear about the 11 under 500. Well, soon to be 10 under 500 tonight.
I will tell you what I would like to see.
Okay.
I would like to see another catcher here, though.
Well, why? Because Austin Wilson hitting under 200 isn't exciting you, and
no,
Escara doesn't excite you either. I get it. I don't like him either.
But even if it's not a big hitting catcher, I would like to see another veteran catcher here. Even if he's not the best hitting catcher, I would like to see another veteran catcher here, because if something does happen to Wells, there is nobody down here.
No, I agree with you on that.
So that would be one of my things as we hit the trade deadline, what I would like to see. So
I think we will see that, by the way.
All right. Kev?
Would you like to see a lefty reliever? Maybe Brooks Raley interest you?
Sure.
I'll take Luis Torrens, by the way.
I don't want to give a Torrens. Guy throws everybody out.
I know. That's the guy I want. That's exactly what Gino's talking about, by the way.
Oh, I know.
He'd be a great hitter, but you know what? You don't run on him.
That came right up to my mind when Gino was talking about that want list from a catcher. Yeah, I mean, the Mets, maybe they'll win tonight. Maybe the bullpen won't blow it. They're 5 in a row loss, 22-33, 400 ball. You know, the last week during the 5-game losing streak, they've had A.J. Ewing in cleanup. Guy who just came up. He's supposed to be a speed guy. He's cleaning cleanup. Marcus Simeon with a 65 OPS plus is hitting cleanup. I know you don't have much of another choice, but my goodness, it's just been bad. And you know what? As a Mets fan, thankfully, we've had the Knicks to keep us entertained and interested. And with the way the Mets are going, I can't wait for the World Cup to be open up June 11th.
I know. Which
it's right we'll get into. June 11th, Mexico versus South Africa. June 12th, the U.S. plays Paraguay. 9 o'clock, Friday night, Fox. I'll be watching. And I'd rather reclaim my time to talk a little bit of another soccer point.
Okay, go ahead.
So over in England, so you know they have the tiered system there. Premier League at the top, Championship League right below it, relegation, promotion. So the English Championship League had their version of Spygate.
Okay.
Top two, Coventry and Ipswich, automatic promotion. They have a playoff, 3-6, 4-5, 2-game aggregate. The two winners play to move up.
Gino has an Ipswich jersey, by the way, in case you don't know it.
Come on, with a name like Ipswich, you got to have the jersey. So Southampton beat Middlesbrough in the 2-game aggregate 2-1.
As expected.
But there was controversy. Southampton was accused of spying on Middlesbrough practices before game one.
Really?
After investigation and after interviews and everything else, they went before an impartial board for the hearing, and Southampton admitted to spying.
Okay.
They were also accused two times earlier, once against Oxford in December, once against Ipswich in April. And the English Football League said, you know what? You're disqualified. So Middlesbrough got a chance to play for the final. They lost to Hull City. So Hull City gets the promotion. But Southampton not only got DQ'd, they're also being docked 4 points last year, which is basically a loss and a tie. I mean, we had Spygate here, and what did the Patriots get? Slap on the wrist?
They got a fine. Maybe would they lose a draft pick?
They lose a draft pick. That'll be the equivalent, basically telling the Patriots, yeah, you're starting off the season 0-1.
It's crazy.
I thought it was just interesting to see the way that they handled a Spygate situation. Hey, you were caught, and now after all the evidence came out, you admitted to being caught. And, they were disqualified from the playoffs.
That's
and the
crazy.
Red team played, so that was interesting. And I think I've gotten more into soccer between Ted Lasso and Welcome to Wrexham.
I don't watch the Welcome show. I watched Lasso a lot. I liked it a lot. Be a goldfish, baby. Be a goldfish.
So that leads me a little bit into my gems for the week.
Okay. All right.
So I was looking for something.
I just want to give one last baseball point, by the way.
Yep.
Christopher Sanchez today. Not only because I had the wisdom of drafting him in the 12th round in fantasy a year ago. set the record for the Phillies pitchers with consecutive scoreless innings. Is up to 44 and two-thirds now. Passing a guy that Gino was always a big fan of his delivery, Grover Cleveland Alexander, back in 1911 with his 41 and two-thirds. Listen, say what you want. This kid has been much better than any of us thought he was going to turn out to be. Wheeler's pitching well, too. The Phillies are back. The Braves come back. That's going to be a fun two-team race, I think. But we'll see what happens. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But just
I only drafted Grover Cleveland for his whip, by the way. But go ahead.
Amazing whip. And, you know, the simple thing is right now in Queens, it's about watching Benj and Tong and Ewing and McClain. And it's just not as much fun because they were supposed to be building a winner around Soto, and they're not doing that right now. Sorry, Kevin. Yep.
No problem. So I was looking for interesting box scores, and I found one in soccer, believe it or not. 2002, Madagascar. They had a 14 playoff round robin for
Tough place to play.
Defending champ S.O. Lemieux tied 3-3. Late penalty awarded to the other team to force a draw, and they wound up losing a chance to win the championship. And so they played AS Edema, who had already clinched the championship. So S.O. Lemieux came out, with the same referee in the game. The coach and the referee argued. S.O. Lemieux, every time they got the ball, purposely, deliberately scored an own goal. In the Guinness Book of Records, that goes down as a 149-0 final score.
Wow. Holy
cow. Breaking the record, the known record, when Arbroath beat Bonacord in the 1885 Scottish Cup 36-0. So they obliterated the record.
I had Bonacord plus 35. I lost. It was brutal.
But it's 149-0 was the official score. It's in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Oh my God.
Just wanted to look it up.
That is crazy.
back to normal sports. Like baseball. Okay. So Houston, of course, the other night with their combined no-hitter, Amai pitched 6, Stephen O'Kurt the 7th, and then making his major league debut, Santa. Yes, Allenberg Santa got the last 2 innings, 9-0 over the Rangers. Santa in his major league debut, last 2 innings, the last pitcher to be part of a no-hitter in his major league debut. 1892, October 15th, last day of the season, Bumpus Jones of the Cincinnati Reds hurled a 7-1 no-hitter. Unearned run on an error. Let's hope Santa has a little bit better career. Jones pitched the next year for the Reds and the Giants. 1-4, 10.19 ERA. Never pitched a game. Another game in the major leagues.
It's another Moonlight Graham moment, only he got to play.
Yeah. But I thought it was interesting. Including the postseason, 5th combined no-hitter by the Astros.
They're good at it.
Going back to the one against the Yankees when Oswalt pitched the first inning, then they brought in 6-7 of the relievers. No other team has more than 2. But what got me was the Astros have been around since 62, same as the Mets. Mets have 2 no-hitters. The Astros now are 18, tied for 3rd most in Major League history.
They did have Nolan Ryan.
But Ryan only pitched, what, one of them?
I think it was one. I think it was only one with them.
Yeah. But, you know, top 2 are Dodgers and White Sox. They've been around forever.
Yeah.
And tied with them for 3rd are the Giants, the Red Sox, and the Cubs. One of these things is not like the others.
The Astros get no hitters, my friend.
Yep. And I have a trivia question for you.
Okay.
What franchise?
Uh-oh.
Drafted 2 Hall of Fame NFL quarterbacks in the same year.
2 Hall of Fame NFL quarterbacks in the same year.
What franchise drafted them?
Were the Yankees?
No.
Blue Jays?
We'll just go through the record league. The 1979 Kansas City Royals selected Dan Marino in the 4th round and John Elway in the 18th round.
Oh, goodness.
I was thinking it was Elway. I was just trying to think there was somebody else. That was the guy I was going with.
Yeah.
Honestly, that was where I was.
You're right path there.
I was like, I thought the Yankees drafted Elway, but it wasn't the Yankees. So there you go.
Yep. So those are my little hidden gems for the week.
Cool.
All right. We'll go around the world if we got anything to throw out there.
I got women's softball for you.
Go for it.
Gino, you're a big fan of Mia Williams. I know you are. Here's the thing about Mia Williams. Her father's Jason Williams, a.k.a. White Chocolate. Went to play basketball, NBA champion with the with Miami Heat. He also played for the Kings and the Grizzlies and a few other teams. Went to the University of Florida, as did his daughter, Mia Williams. So they're playing the Super Regional this week, Florida against Texas Tech. But Mia Williams transferred to Texas Tech. And the Florida team was not happy about it. And they beamed her five times. She got hit by five pitches in the three-game set. She also had two game-winning monstrous home runs to help win the series for Texas Tech. There was a bench-clearing kind of brawl. Jason Williams got tossed because the crowd was on his daughter, and he started cursing back at them. We had, Florida wouldn't come out and shake hands after the loss of the series. This was about as intense a women's softball three-game set in a super regional.
Wow.
That I have ever heard of. I mean, they beamed this girl five times in three games. I mean, it was a lot. And, and again, Jason Williams getting into fights with his alma mater, which is kind of difficult. Mia Williams transferred, and that was that. But that's what I had for women's softball. Kev, you have anything you want to add?
Women's softball? Do I have nothing else for women's softball?
Anything else you want to add for any of the sport?
One tragedy last week. Kyle Busch, 41 years old, passed away. It's come out. It was pneumonia into sepsis and passed away rather quickly. So 2 weeks ago, he was racing up here in New York, not far from me, probably, up in Watkins Glen, the roadways. Near the end of the race, he asked, the crew, we need a doctor to be available. I need a shot, blah, blah, blah. Probably some dehydration, whatever else is going on. The next weekend, he's in Dover. He wins the Truck Series race in Dover, finishes mid-pack in the NASCAR race, and about 3 days later, he's passed away from complications from the pneumonia to sepsis, and just, 41 years old, leaves behind a young family, just an incredible shock. And, none of us follow NASCAR, but Busch is one of the names that we definitely know.
Absolutely.
Kyle Busch, it's a legendary family. He's a legendary, driver, and way too young.
So they've retired the number 8 temporarily. Richard Childress Racing was his team. Supposedly they're going to hold the number. Supposedly Busch's son, he's 12 or 13 years old. At that age group, he's winning consistently and following his dad's footsteps. So if and when he comes in and wants to race NASCAR, he will inherit his dad's number 8.
Wow. Yeah, this is like probably one of the biggest things since Earnhardt. That's the guy. That's the correlation. That was a tragedy on the actual track.
On the track itself. Yep.
This is a little different, but yeah, no, very, very sad.
All right, let's hit the NFL. So Green Bay may need to find another running back because Josh Jacobs was arrested and booked on several domestic violence charges on Tuesday. He was released apparently today, but no telling what the NFL will be doing with him. Obviously months away from start of the season, but Green Bay could be looking for a new running back. So
just to clarify, released from jail or whatever, but not released from
time. Yeah, the Packers haven't released him yet.
Correct.
Apparently strangulation, amongst other things, Listen, I mean, there's always a little controversy in football. There's a lot of athletes, unfortunately, that get into the domestic violence. Not a lot. I mean, it'd be wrong to say that, but there's more per player, than in any other sport in baseball, than in football with this, I should say. It's just sad to see. You don't want to see that kind of stuff.
Yep.
The Jets today traded Irv Charles, Kev. Special teams ace. For the ever so exciting traditional 7th round pick.
Yeah. Missed all of last year with the ACL. Was not going to factor much into the plan. So you pick up. I've been fine with a bag of training camp footballs.
Yeah, they got a conditional 7th round pick. Conditional
7th. I guess if he makes a team and plays enough games in special teams, they'll get a 7th rounder. Better than nothing.
Exactly. And basically, they drafted Arian Smith last year, the Jets, to be that special teams ace. They liked what they saw last year. They're seeing good things so far this year. And I think that's why a trade of this magnitude, I'm joking, did happen this week. You know, it just, you know, listen, we'll see what happens. You know, don't take it the wrong way when I say this. I'm excited about the Jets. I'm not optimistic in any way, shape, or form, but I'm excited to watch them play. I don't expect anything good to happen this year. Quick basketball point. I'm sorry, Kev, what was that?
I was going to say, you know, my son was home and talked with him and his buddies last night, and we're looking at the Jets' schedule. You know, they could legitimately be like 5-12 despite playing a lot better than last year.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Week one at Tennessee, that's the key. We'll get more into that as
you can tell with the way the Mets are going, I'm so ready for the Jets season.
Absolutely.
Just have my heart broken there, too.
Months to go. Quick thought, little college basketball point for you guys. So the Players Era Tournament, 16 tournament goes on in Vegas. It's a preseason tournament, and it goes around Thanksgiving. So St. John's and Louisville are lined up where if they each win that first game, they will play each other on Thanksgiving Day. So Patino against his former squad. Louisville went out and bought a ton of players this year. St. John's brought in a bunch of professionals from Europe. We're going to find out what's going on. But I got to tell you, if it's like a night game, like 7 or 8 o'clock, and I'm not that into the 8 o'clock, whatever the NFL game is, I'll find my way to the Louisville-St. John's game. I'll be all in on that.
But Though we've got Thanksgiving Eve and Black Friday and more games Sunday and the following Monday, we might need a little break from NFL football. So maybe a little college St. John's Louisville early season would be a nice little dessert on Thanksgiving night.
Exactly. There's nothing better than a good overreaction to November college basketball. Oh, they suck. They're done. They're not going to make the tournament. They're horrible. Oh, they can't rebound. They can't score. Nobody can shoot.
They're 1-1. What is this?
And that's what will happen with either one of the squads that lose that night. But anyway, if they both win their first match, and which I didn't have Louisville's down, so I don't want to get into that. But, yeah, that was my college basketball point. You guys have any other sports you want to touch on?
Yeah, Gino? I'm good.
Nope, I'm good. 51
minutes, Gino. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Gino, here with Kevin, talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where nobody really knows what a Knickerbocker is. Anyway, please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. We're up on social media a lot. Please like our stuff. And if you don't like it, pretend you like it and share it to everybody else. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness. Award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.